presence of everyone this afternoon. Good to have everybody here after that fantastic lunch, great lunch. And while we were at lunch, I said, Rand, did you see that contribution? And I quote, he says, yeah, we need to have an elders meeting and book a trip to the Bahamas. My goodness. I'm not suggesting for sure that we've got a problem here. but all of us might need to be on guard. That's a wonderful contribution for the first Sunday of the new year. Just wonderful. And we appreciate you and the way God has blessed you and your generosity so very much. The gospel meeting does begin January 25 through 28, I guess it is, 5, 6, 7, 8, Sunday through Wednesday. Waylon will be here to preach during that gospel meeting. And it was just a few days ago we were over there visiting during the last gospel meeting, getting together at night, having our lunches, our suppers together. And Randy took Bart and me looking at historical sites one day. And it was a good week. We had good preaching. The church, I think, was encouraged, built up, and that's what we want. And anyway, it's been a year. And we look forward to another winter meeting in just a few weeks. I began a lesson this morning that I want to try to finish this afternoon, which means I can't dally on the points. At least I can list the points and mention just a few things about each one. Initial conflicts that we have among men as given by God through Moses in the book of Genesis. Just take that one book and look how all of our problems among men surfaced. We discussed five of them this morning. The wrong worship, the problem that developed over wrong worship, over people being corrupt at heart, over someone watching out for his own interests, which in itself is fine, but a conflict arose between people. When one group seeks to impose its will on another group, conflict surfaces. And then the last one we discussed this morning was the conflict that came up regarding children. There was quite a bit of that, and there still is quite a bit of that in this world. Number six, the next one is, we see conflict that surfaced when two men wanted the same woman. Now, that is insightful. And you still see, you know, on the earth today, problems that obtain that way. Now, civilized people should know how to handle that difficulty. Uncivilized, violent, selfish, mean-spirited, mean people, they may settle it another way. You know, you'll hear about somebody being shot down at a bar somewhere, saloon. And a lot of times, it has to do with, you know, somebody is showing interest in somebody else's girlfriend or his wife or lover or whatever it is. That just goes on out in the world. And we've been warned in Scripture about jealousy being the rage of a man. And the way that God made man and the way that He made woman. So a lot of conflicts over history have developed when two men wanted the same woman. It comes up in Genesis 20. Of course, it's in the storyline of God's taking care of Abraham. Abraham was a great man, the father of the faithful, Romans chapter 4. He did not have a dysfunctional family. That's just wrong. But at any rate, Abraham and Abimelech, you know, were at odds over Sarah. Abimelech didn't know she was Abraham's wife. Abraham knew that, but he wasn't going to show his true colors at that point with regard to her. So it comes up in Genesis 20. You'll have it in chapter 26, chapter 35. When two men are after or want to show interest in the same woman. Back when we were in high school or college, you know, two boys might be interested in the same girl. Well, we just had to work those things out. And it was finally decided on by what the girl wanted. That's what it came to, didn't it? What she decided. What she wanted. At any rate, number seven. Sometimes conflict surfaced when one man wanted a woman too much. When one man wanted one woman too much. Now, that in a way sounds strange, doesn't it? But you go to Genesis 34 and you've got a case of that. Shechem wanted Dinah. Who's Dinah? Dinah was Jacob's daughter. And he commits fornication with Dinah. Anytime that happens, that means you want her too much. You may have a right to want her, but you don't have a right to want her to the point of being willing to commit sin to get her. Now that's just wrong. The Bible teaches that. Given moral law, men and women ought to be able to recognize the distinction between marriage, where you are committed in heart and body to one person for life, or where you're not committed, but you want the other person. Now there's a difference between just living like animals and living like humans. We hear people dumb it down and talk like, without the Bible you can't tell. I don't believe that for a second. We'll hear preachers even talking about, well, people in the world today, they don't recognize sin. Well now, wait a minute before you come down to that conclusion. I may want to restate that and say, it's not that they don't recognize it, they're not impressed by it. That's what I'm going to say. Don't tell me somebody can't tell the difference between being a fornicator and being married. Now, if you can't tell the difference between fornication and what causes that, and marriage and the commitment to that, you've already become perverted. You've got scars all over the image of God. You've already been so false to yourself, it's like a person that's seared his conscience. You can't see the obvious. Don't tell me they can't tell the difference. I know they can tell the difference. They may not admit that they can tell the difference. They may not want to know the difference. They certainly don't want to be held accountable for the difference. But anybody made in the image of God can tell the difference between God and the devil, and the basic fundamental features that distinguish moral right from moral wrong. So I'm not buying into this stuff. Well, the world's just gotten so bad they just can't tell anymore. Give me a break. They can tell. It may be they don't want to tell. So anyway, Shechem has Dinah. And then the brothers later say, you know, some of her brothers, well, he shouldn't have treated her like a harlot. But then, by the way, that's where I wanted to come back to Adam. I said this morning in our sermon, we were picking up the cases where there was conflict between humans, and I said, you recall, in Genesis 3, there's nothing said about conflict between Adam and Eve. Even after the sin, no conflict. 1 Timothy 2, verses 8 through 15, Paul tells me Adam was not deceived. Now Moses does not tell me that, but Paul does. Well then you say, well, why in the world, if he wasn't deceived, why did he partake of the forbidden fruit? My personal opinion is, it's the point we're on right here. He wanted her too much. He'd already lived without another human being. He'd already been in a situation of solitude. And he didn't want to go back to that. And he didn't want her to lose out the garden. And he'd stay. In other words, he's saying, her fortunes will be my fortunes. Sort of the reverse of Ruth. You know, talking to her mother-in-law, where you go, I'll go. Well, it's kind of like, it's like that. I want her fortunes to be my fortunes. He wasn't deceived. He knew what God said, and he knew what God said was true. But he walked out, he was driven out of the garden with her. It just looks like, if you have a better answer, give it to me. It looks like he simply did not want to lose her. He didn't want to have to stay without her. But he'd have God. And that's what he had before in his solitude. And I'm simply saying it just looks like he got imbalanced right there and wanted something too much. Anytime your husband or your wife counts with you more than God does, you better back up and reapprise things. If my wife says, curse God and die, God says, don't you listen to her. If your husband tells you, curse God and die, don't you listen to him. Our ultimate obligation is to God. And anytime we put anybody ahead of that, we are wrong. Number 8. When a woman wants a man other than her husband for sexual purposes. Genesis 39:7-20, we've got a case of this. Does this remind you of situations we have today in the world? I'm just saying what surfaced in Genesis. Conflict arose. This is Potiphar's wife warning Joseph. Well, he's not her husband, but she wants him. And so conflict. And all of that great work that in the providential manipulation comes into play to spare the Hebrews comes about because of her right there. Isn't that amazing? She wants Joseph for sexual purposes, and he's not her husband. When a woman wants a man other than her husband for those purposes, she's wrong. And the conflict developed in Genesis over that very thing. And then we come to number 9. And this is just when a man wants a harlot. Judah and Tamar. What does the world think about all of this? By the way, do we still have problems in big cities with prostitution? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that would like to say, you know, that shouldn't even be against the law. And there are a lot of people that think that way. But is it wrong? And how long have we had to be coping with this kind of thing on the earth? Go all the way back to Genesis. And you've got this Judah, the son of Jacob. And he goes into a harlot. He thinks it's a harlot. It turns out to be his ex-daughter-in-law, whose husband has died. And he gets fooled. She comes close to dying. The whole thing is a sad, horrible, just horrible, immoral mess. But now when it comes to the man, what do people do? Oh, well, men will be men. Boys will be boys. Yeah, but what does that mean? Does it mean that men will be devils? Men will be immoralists. Boys are just rotten scum. Girls are the sweet, cute, nice, righteous things. Boys are scum. Is that what you teach boys and girls? No, it shouldn't be. But I know differences between boys and girls. I had boys, I had a girl, I am a boy, I married a girl. I can tell the difference. I can tell the difference. But the way that some people in the world, because of their sins, treat that, well, you know, people will be evil and boys will be more evil than women. I'm not going to say that. I remember hearing a female politician one time several years ago, hearing her say that she didn't think that, and I appreciate her saying that too. She said, I do not think that women are morally superior to men. Now, if a man says that, he's a chauvinist. If she says that, she may be wrong, but at least she's trying to be objective. Somebody may say. But see, how do you look at things? Well, you know, Judah, his wife had died. See, his wife had died. And there's a purpose for a wife. And so he thinks he's going into a harlot. What does the world say about that? They're very soft on harlotry, aren't they? Just like the world is very soft on fornication. The Bible's not soft on either. But in Genesis 38, 12 through 26, you can read that sad story. Number 10, Genesis 26, verses 12 through 16. Here we've got a problem that surfaces because a very prominent, influential person is irritated over somebody else's wealth. A problem surfaces between Abimelech and Isaac. Abimelech says to Isaac, and Isaac, of course, is the son of Abraham. Abraham was a very wealthy man. Isaac's got a lot. And Abimelech says in verse 16, chapter 26, here it is, go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. We don't want you around here. You've got too much. You're so different from the rest of us. We reminded of this unequal amount of good fortune, or God's blessings, physical blessings, whatever, all of the time. We don't want to face this all of the time. We want you to leave. Now, that doesn't exactly sound noble and big-hearted and willing to rejoice with somebody else's good fortune. It's human irritation over the good fortune of somebody else. Does that still occur? The psalmist will come along and warn us against being envious of wicked people that are rich. Warns us about that. Be careful what you think about people and their money. You may not have it right, but God tells us how to have it in mind. And don't overstate the value of wealth. You can do some good things with wealth, and some people do a lot of bad things with wealth. But whatever you've got from God, the amount that you got, just use it for God. Use it to God's glory. Now, there can be some overlapping of some of these points. But the next one is Genesis 25, Jacob and Esau, when one simply has what another wants. Jacob wanted Esau's birthright. Jacob wanted Esau's blessing. And he obtained both. God uses all of that in His own divine, majestic, omniscient way. But a problem develops between, we're talking about social conflict, between Jacob and Esau that lasted for a long time. Esau wanted to kill his brother. Reminds us of Cain and Abel. He wants to kill his brother after his father dies. At any rate, Jacob and Esau finally reconciled before they die, for which we are very, very grateful. And God did bless the descendants of Esau as He blessed the descendants of Jacob. But all of this conflict can arise, and it still does to this day, when you have something that I want and I have no legitimate route to obtain it. There are things I have a right to if you put them on the market. There are things I don't have a right to even if you tried to put them on the market. So you have to be careful about what is really in God's sight available. According to Bible authority, what is available to me? Some things are available, some things are not available. Number 12. And of course, as I say, there's overlapping, but say it like this. When somebody intends to take advantage of somebody else. Now, Jacob did that, of course, with Laban, and once with the help of his mother. Jacob later said Laban changed his wages 10 times. It's sort of a hyperbolic statement. Changed my wages 10 times. But Laban kept on trying to take advantage of Jacob. And God always was watching out for Jacob. So He didn't let Laban hurt him. But in a lot of cases, people can be hurt. And so in Genesis 31, verses 1 through 16, if you'll just read there, you can see that the conflict arises when I do not intend to be fair. Have you ever thought about the golden rule, Matthew 7, 12? And yet, Jesus says, that's not just New Testament legislation. That's the thrust of the Old Testament law of Moses. Treat people like you want to be treated, for this is the law and the prophets. You don't have it stated succinctly like you do in Matthew 7, 12. But He says this captures the basic thrust of the direction of the old law. So a Jew was supposed to treat his fellow Jew like he himself wanted to be treated. Jesus tells us, you treat your fellow man like you want to be treated. And this conflict surfaces when people do not intend to do that. I'm not going to be fair with you and treat you like I want to be treated. I intend to cheat you. We have that in Genesis 31. And then this one is interesting. I'm coming close to the end here. Number 13, Genesis 26, verses 34 through 35, in-laws. My, my. Trouble in in-laws. And you can go back and cover other cases with this description too. We can call this one in-laws and other relatives. In-laws and other relatives. How many problems have you seen in the family? Ooh, I can think of things I don't want to talk about. And I don't call them up in mind very often. But just, you know, growing up, just seeing your kinfolk. You know, seeing your kinfolk at get-togethers, things that were said or done or that left impressions on you because you didn't think that was quite right or something. Well, they shouldn't be doing that or saying that or acting like that or whatever. Genesis 26, Esau's wives, the daughters-in-law. Have there ever been in-laws that didn't get along? Ever been mothers-in-law that didn't get along with daughters-in-law? I guess so. Sons-in-law that didn't get along with mothers. How many mother-in-law jokes have you heard in your lifetime? How many have you told? You know, some of them are funny. They really are. But that's if you really love your mother-in-law. If you hate her, they're not very funny. So my goodness, that's my case. That's the way it is. It's horrible, though, the way that people don't get along so well in families. They were grief of mind to Isaac's wife. And then other relatives. One case is Genesis 42, 35 through 38. When Jacob and his sons are into it. Fathers and sons ever get aggravated? Yeah. You know, you look back on your life, just, man, I was so stupid sometimes. Just, I thought I understood it, but I didn't. You know, fathers and sons getting into it over various things. That case had to do with whether or not Benjamin gets to go down to Egypt. You know, Judah is down there being held captive. The family needs more food. The boys come to the father and say, we're out of food, we got to go back. And he said, the man down there said, well, he's not going to give us any more food if we don't take Benjamin. And he says, well, you're not taking him. Reminds us of Paul and Barnabas. It was kind of a sharp thing, looks to me like. You're not going to take him. I've lost Joseph. Judah is down there, and now you would deprive me of Benjamin. He's not going. And then they'll argue and talk about it, you know, and write it out. And well, we can't get any food. There's no point in going. And finally he caves in. Somebody had to cave in. He caves in finally. But conflict over in-laws. My goodness. Oh, that's something to think about. I remember one of my cousins years ago. Turned out to be such a rotten child. Raised by God-fearing parents. Members of the church. And this boy, he was just a criminal. Just a criminal. And my grandparents would go to services, and he knew when services were. And he'd go out with his hoodlums and steal gasoline out of my grandfather's gasoline tank. I told Susie, we were visiting with Susie the other day, I was telling her about this case. I think about it sometimes. The sheriff finally asked my hoodlum cousin one time, he said, why don't you leave here? I mean, he knew how hard it was on the family. He knew the family was a good family. Why don't you leave here? A non-Christian sheriff just asking him that. And that's just an extreme case of problems in a family. Most problems never get that far. He wound up in the state penitentiary. But you think about that. In-law problems and problems among family members. And then finally, the last one that I got in this outline, number 14. Remember Genesis 40, verses 1 through 4? You've got the case where Joseph is in charge of all of Pharaoh's prisoners. And who lands there one day but a butler and a baker? And we're told, we're not given the details, but they had offended the king. Conflict that landed somebody in prison. How did it come about? Details aren't given, but the definitive conclusion is stated. They did something that the king didn't like at all. You know, and there's warning in Scripture about being careful with authority. Being careful with God's delegated authority in kings, ministers of God for good. And you need to be careful and watch yourself. People in whom God has invested in principle, you know, life and death. Jesus makes that very point before Pilate. John 18, 36, 37, 38. And so it's an important thing to remember. In order to have society and not anarchy, someone has to be in control. And to have control, you have to have submission. So be careful that you don't mess up in your own life by doing something, you know, that's against authority. Paul would later say himself, if I've done anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. Isn't that something? I willfully submit to capital punishment if it can be proven I'm guilty of a capital offense. That's the way I should take it. That's the way you should take it. You don't resist justice. You're for justice. Of course, he knew he hadn't done anything like that. But I refuse not to die. One of these men later died. And one of them lived. But the problem surfaced between people and government. And it's still going on. There are surely some more cases, less obvious ones, and maybe some better descriptions of these cases. But you just go survey through the book of Genesis. And you just follow the history and recall the scenes. And you start picking out problems that the Scriptures chronicle. And you see the way that they came about. And it's just like looking in the newspaper today and seeing our world in America or just in other countries. It's still going the same basic way. We're still men and women living on God's earth and in need of very much direction and care. If you're here this afternoon and not a Christian, come in faith, repent of your sins, make the good confession, be baptized into Christ. If you've done that and gone astray, we encourage you to come back right now while together we stand, while we sing. Won't you?